which is Eusebio Guevara versus Alberto Gonzalez. Morning.
May it please the court, I'm Charles Roth for the petitioner Eusebio Guevara. Mr. Guevara is a lawful permanent resident alien from Honduras. He was put into removal proceedings after returning from a brief trip abroad. Because he had three misdemeanor convictions in the past, the law treated him as an applicant for admission when he returned to the United States. He was therefore charged with inadmissibility under Section 212 of the INA. That's the difference between this case and the one that follows. The case that follows, he had never left and was therefore charged under 237 of the code. This turned out to be lucky for Mr. Guevara, in a sense, because the board found that because he was charged under 212, he was eligible to seek a waiver under Section 212C of the code.
Now, we now have this case from the Eighth Circuit, Solana Chicas. That takes the position the government advocates here. So let's distinguish Solano Chicas. How should we factor it into our decision?
Well, there are two issues here. The second issue that I raised was whether the board had the authority to enter a removal order in the first instance. The government, the statute says that either a finding of removability or an order of removal can constitute a removal order. In every single asylum case that's heard in the immigration court, the immigration judge determines whether the individual is removable, and everybody concedes removability and says, I want to apply for asylum. Under the government's reading of the statute, that finding of removability means the individual is ordered removed, and then they apply for asylum. And if they're granted asylum, then they apparently have been ordered removed and then granted asylum. If they're denied asylum, I guess that means they have two orders of removal against them. The Eighth Circuit is motivated by, as I read it, a disinclination to cause inefficiency. And frankly, as a policy matter, we agree. Congress is actually considering, the House passed a bill, H.R. 4437, which includes Section 801, which would give the board authority to enter a removal order in the first instance. The Senate just passed a bill out of committee that would do the same thing. We think Congress this needs a legislative fix. We're not opposed. We hate everything about 4437 except this little provision. So as a policy matter, we agree that this is an inefficiency and we'd like to see it change. But the government's argument would lead to even more inefficiencies. What do I do if my client has something that might be a removal order and is still applying for relief? It doesn't make sense for me to file an appeal to the Board of Immigration Appeals when the asylum claim hasn't even been adjudicated. Or do I file two notices of appeal to the Board of Immigration Appeals? And what happens if the board remands the case but leaves the finding of removability undisturbed? Does that mean a petition for review is filed with this court? If a finding of removability is an order of removal, it twists those terms out of all recognition. And what I'm nervous about is, of course, this always comes back to hurt us. If we don't file a notice of appeal from the initial order of removal, we don't get the benefit of an automatic stay of that removal. A cautious and conscientious attorney would... I just don't know where the government's argument would end up leading. But it's our belief that the term removability applies to those circumstances where there is no relief phase. For example, reinstatement of removal, where an individual is determined to be removable pursuant to prior order of removal and then having reentered the country unlawfully. The prior order of removal is reinstated. There isn't a second set of proceedings. The first order is simply reinstated. And so that's what we took that to refer to.
What should we do with the fact that Section 1101A, 47A includes in the definition of order of deportation a finding that an alien is deportable? Does your reading of the statute make those words superfluous, do you think?
No. Well, the example that I just gave of reinstatement of removal would be a situation...
That takes care of...
Yes. And the problem with the government's interpretation is that if in every case there's a finding of removability, and then if you lose an order of removal, then that sort of renders the last three words superfluous. Mm-hmm. In other words, if everybody's found removable, is there one removal order entered or two? And if the removal order is entered when the finding of removability is made, then what are we doing there for the other year or two that it takes to finalize the relief proceedings?
This may seem like a foolish question, but if we remand this, the IJ will then enter an order of deportation?
In most cases, it would not help at all. In this case, there were some issues with the transcript that we'd like to clear up.
Yeah.
This is an argument that seems to us correct, and so I felt obliged to make it. I would much rather win on my first point.
Yeah.
If you don't have any more questions about the circuit
sure.
split, I would go to. In 2000, before 2002, the board reviewed every immigration judge decision de novo. In 2002, the Attorney General changed the rules. He promulgated regulations that set aside a sphere of IJ decisions that are granted deferential review, clear error review. Those are factual related and credibility related decisions. We think rehabilitation falls into the heartland of that. When he promulgated those regulations, he published an explanation for them. The explanation cites the what are traditionally known as the equities, which are considered when adjudicating any application for relief. Rehabilitation is certainly one of the most important equities considered in any immigration relief case. And I would note the government doesn't disagree that rehabilitation is reviewed for clear error. In their brief at page 16 and also 18 to 19, they argue that rehabilitation is reviewed for clear error. Now, the government tries to escape the logic of that by saying the board didn't reverse the finding of rehabilitation. The board said, yes, he's been rehabilitated, but we're going to give that neutral weight. Now, under the Chenery Doctrine, the agency's counsel's post hoc re-rationalizations can't form the basis for this court's review. You're reviewing the decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals, and the Board of Immigration Appeals doesn't say we're going to discount the weight given to rehabilitation. It doesn't say, considering all the factors, we're still going to deny relief. It says we find rehabilitation to be a neutral factor. If we're standing here with a finding that this individual has been rehabilitated, it makes no sense. It would be completely illogical to say we're going to give that no weight or neutral weight or it doesn't help him or hurt him. Rehabilitation is the central question to every 212C case. A 212C application ordinarily requires a showing of rehabilitation before it can be granted. And so the board either was illogical or it employed the wrong standard of review, and either of those outcomes requires reversal.
Before you sit down, would you clarify something for me? Your client's sexual assault conviction is from what county in Wisconsin? I went on CCAP to find it, and I didn't find it. Do you know if it was Milwaukee?
I do not know. I know it was a misdemeanor conviction, and so it's possible that it would be listed under a different database than... I believe because it's a misdemeanor, it wouldn't be under the Department of Corrections.
Depends on how the case originated. Did it originate as a felony charge?
That's true. I think it may have. I will.
Where did he live? Do you know where he lived?
I will find that out when I stand up again.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hello, Mr. Grimes.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
James E. Grimes for the Attorney General. Judge Sykes, I just checked the record. It says Green Bay, which I'm not
Brown
familiar
County,
with.
Brown County, then.
Okay. I'm not familiar with the...
Okay.
With
the, let me ask you something. If we treat a finding deportability as if it were an order of deportation, when does the time to appeal that finding begin to run? In other words, could we have a situation where an alien is obliged to appeal before the IJ has even... decided whether he's entitled to relief. There could be a number. It seems to me there could be a number of really unintended consequences to treating deportability as equivalent to an order of deportation.
Your Honor, that is governed by the regulation at 8 CFR 1003.3.
A little slower, please.
I'm sorry. 8 CFR 1003.3.
Again, I'm sorry.
8 CFR 1003.3. That's the Notice of Appeal regulation. An alien can't file a Notice of Appeal until the immigration judge issues his or her decision. If the alien were to seek review of the initial finding of removability, the board would consider that an interlocutory appeal and dismiss it unless it fell within a small, narrowly defined set of cases implicating its interlocutory jurisdiction.
Well, I mean, the petitioner also points out that if a conclusion that an alien is deportable is an order of deportation, then an IJ's subsequent order of deportation would either be a nullity or a second order of deportation. Why would an alien ever concede deportability under that scenario?
Well, I think what is really his complaint is really that the immigration judge is crossing all his I's and crossing all his T's and dotting all his I's. The immigration judge finds the alien removable at some point, and then at the conclusion of proceedings would say, okay, I order you removed. Maybe that second statement by the immigration judge is superfluous. But just because the immigration judge's statement is superfluous doesn't mean the statute is superfluous. If you read the statute as written, nothing in the statute is superfluous.
Yeah, but we have to deal with the immigration judge. And, for instance, here, talk about crossing T's and dotting I's. How do we deal with the obvious problems in the IJ's transcript? Something is missing between pages 10 and 11. Something is missing between pages 11 and 12. I mean, how can we not remand to clarify what was going on there? I don't have any confidence when I read those pages I know what the IJ said.
If you look, I believe what's missing is if you go from pages 10 to 11, there's not a problem between 10 and 11 because what you have is just a restatement of the last two lines on 10 at the top of page 11. What you're missing is something between 11 and 12 of the immigration judge's decision, but as petitioner points out, I believe in his brief or his reply brief, it's clear that what the immigration judge is getting at there is that this petitioner has enough positive equities that he's entitled to relief under Section 1182C. So my point in response to Your Honor's first question was that really the statute isn't superfluous. Perhaps the immigration judge saying, therefore, I order you removed might be superfluous, but I don't really see why that would matter. The statute specifically says, as Your Honor noted, that a finding of removability is defined as an order of removal, and that the board can then finalize that order by affirming it, which is what the board did at pages 2 and 3 of the record. And Your Honor, it's not perfect. We're trying to fit an oval peg into a round hole here. Petitioner is trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. But I would point out this.
So who gets the benefit of the doubt of all this square and round?
Your Honor, I can explain that his concerns really don't amount to a lot. As I said, perhaps the immigration judge's second statement is superfluous. But if you look to, let's say, Solano Chicas points out, Solano Chicas refers to 8 U.S.C. 1229A, which is the statute dealing with removal proceedings, and it cites the subsection C4A. I think that's a misprint. I think it's actually C1A because there is no C4A. And that statute says that the immigration judge shall determine whether an alien is removable. So the immigration judge, which sort of dovetails with our argument.
What statute or regulation gives the BIA authority to enter an order of deportation? I mean, what has been cited to us is a very general proposition, a very general provision that does not seem applicable. Is there any other authority for this proposition that the BIA is empowered to do this?
Your Honor, there is no specific regulation that says the BIA can affirm. There's also no specific regulation that says the BIA can reverse. There's no specific regulation that says the BIA can grant relief or deny relief.
It's a whole new way to look at law, isn't it?
Well, I suppose you could look at it that way. The Attorney General, instead of giving specific delegation of authority to do each task, gave the broad delegation of authority at 8 CFR 1003.1A1, in which he made the board members his delegates with respect to review of immigration matters.
Well, forgive me, you're only the messenger. But, never mind.
And I understand your Honor's concern. And as I said, I can't. If you would like me to point to a specific regulation that says, board, you can do this, there is no specific regulation that says, board, you can do this. Instead, the Attorney General has broadly delegated his authority and defined those powers at 8 CFR 1003.1D1, in which he instructs the board to act in accordance with law, regulation, and procedure. And it does appear that the definition section contemplates the board having this authority, because the definition really wouldn't make sense if the board didn't have this authority. In any event, Mr. Guevara also raises a concern about needing to appeal a finding of removability in cases where relief is granted. But that's really only going to be an issue in cases in which removability is contested. Of course, it was contested here. And then if an alien does contest removability, that alien ought to appeal that finding in order to preserve the issue in case the government appeals. But if the government does not appeal, then the alien can simply withdraw his appeal under 8 CFR 1003.4, which indicates that if an alien withdraws an appeal before the board issues its decision, then the immigration judge's decision will control as the final agency decision, as if no appeal was taken. And also, an alien cannot appeal a finding of removability that's based on his concession of removability, because that appeal would be subject to summary dismissal by regulation. So there's nothing wrong with filing a notice of appeal, a protective notice of appeal. It's what the regulation contemplates. And there's really very little cost in reading the statute in that way. And I would point out the statute's been around, effective, since April of 1997, and none of the concerns that petitioner has raised have come to light. The statute's, it's not as if the government just pulled this interpretation out of a hat for this case. This is how business has been done, both before the statute was in effect and after the statute was in effect. And once the appeal period expires or the BIA affirms the grant of relief, then the alien is no longer removable. If he gets cancellation or removal, his removal is canceled. If he gets asylum, he has status. The service can't simply just go and pick an alien up off the street who has lawful permanent resident status or asylum and just remove them. They have to place them back in proceedings in order to do that. For instance, with asylum, the asylum statute itself says that you have to do that if the alien has their asylum status revoked at Section 1158C3. So that's simply not how it works. And there's no indication that Congress wanted to add an extra layer to the process when it enacted this definition. I think it's fair to say that through AEDPA and ARERA, Congress was trying to speed things up, not slow things down. And so what would happen would be, if the court were to agree with petitioner, the court would be forcing the board to engage in a needless paper exercise in which it simply sends the case back to the immigration judge so they can enter
It might seem like an unnecessary formality, but it certainly would keep clear the deadlines for filing appeals from orders of deportation.
Your Honor, the appeal cannot be filed until the immigration judge issues his final decision, the type of decision that this court normally reviews in cases in which the board affirms without opinion. That's when the alien can file his appeal. Now, as to the Section 1182C discretionary issue, I believe Mr. Guevara's quarrel here is with the use of the word neutral with respect to rehabilitation. But the weight to be accorded any factor is a matter for the board to decide in the unreviewable exercise of its jurisdiction. And let's put this in context. At page 86, the immigration judge said that he didn't believe Guevara's claim, that he didn't understand why he was pleading guilty. At page 89, he said he did not believe Guerra's testimony about how the offenses occurred. So the immigration judge's rehabilitation finding, and I see my time is up.
Finish your thought. Well,
what I was going to say is his finding doesn't rest on whether or not he accepted responsibility for his action. It rested on the fact that he hadn't been convicted for several years, he wasn't associating with people, the same people, and he'd shown remorse. Well, the board didn't deny those findings, instead relied on what the immigration judge had found. that he hadn't accepted responsibility for his action, and simply found that in light of all the other factors, the seriousness of his offenses outweighed the positive equities. And therefore, we ask that you deny the petition. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Okay, Mr. Roth.
90 seconds.
You're into seconds now.
Okay, 2 minutes.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. The board has always treated remorse as going to the question of rehabilitation. And this court has as well. And all of the policies that favor a deferential review of an immigration judge's decision are applicable there. The immigration judge has firsthand ability to observe the demeanor of the individual, to talk to them, to ask him questions, as questions were asked here of the respondent by the immigration judge where something's unclear.
Let me just ask you a question. It seems inconsistent with rehabilitation to deny that he was ever convicted of these in the first instance, and that's what happened here, didn't it?
Certainly, and there are some people who will say, yeah, I'm really sorry that I got drunk again and I did it again and I'm sorry again. And so, yeah, there are times when
Didn't he actually deny that he had been convicted of anything?
And he pled no contest below. He's actually never admitted, not below and not here, that he committed those offenses. But the fact that if I deny having ever used drugs, to take your last case, and then I have drug samples taken from me every day for the next 16 years, I mean, there's a certain point at which the absence of future drug use might suggest that I'm rehabilitated from drugs, even if I didn't admit having used them in the first place. Turning to the removability order, if the government, I think they're saying that the order of removal isn't a decision, that somehow the immigration judge can find removability and make that finding, make that decision, and that's not a decision somehow that would be final. It doesn't make any sense. This hasn't been an issue. It hasn't been a problem before because this court has never held that a finding of removability is an order of removal. We've always assumed, and it's until the Ninth Circuit decision, that the board had some residual authority to enter a removal order, and the Ninth Circuit's decision has suggested to us that they don't, in fact, have that authority. I see my time's expired.
Did you want to add something? I'll give you a minute.
The immigration judge was the proper person to be making the rehabilitation finding. Having three board members making a rehabilitation finding on a paper record sitting in Falls Church, Virginia, adds little, if anything, to the likely accuracy of making the right call, and it entails significant administrative costs. This kind of redetermination makes no sense, and it's what the Attorney General is intending to avoid. I thank the court.
Thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel. Well done. And we'll take the